a model user, and you know, he won't tell you about it until you really prod him. But so he does a lot of teaching.
Okay, first off, since I'm also presiding, I would encourage those in the back to please find a seat so you're more comfortable. And second thing, I'm going to ask you to respond about the lights on, lights down situation. Unfortunately, I didn't react to David's talk and turn the lights down. I'm afraid with my talk, I might need the lights down a bit. Would that be okay?
You know how to do that?
Yeah.
I went to the workshop today, so I learned those.
Okay, well, I teach soil physics to turf grass science students, and these are students that, and also turf grass science students and also turf grass professionals, and these are very good people who really need to know about things. They're managing a plant right on the edge of death, and they really need to know, you know, sound and close management of irrigation. They need to have sound and close management of drainage. They need to understand soil temperatures and what affects soil temperatures and the energy balances in soil. But they don't have very strong mathematical background. And they, you know, have this, they're standoffish when it comes to soils. They're plant people. And so what I've done is I've developed a series of water flow and energy flow animations to help explain the dynamics of the soils that they're working with. And I'm just basically going to, you know, I was a little bit embarrassed after I put this together because it's just a little slideshow of some of my animations, and it's not like really rocket science in any stretch of the imagination. What I do is I you know, have access to a simulation package. This one is Hydrus 2D, the older version, which I'm very happy with at the present time. But I get access to a simulation package, and I create what I think is a realistic simulation or a soil situation, a soil situation that applies to the audience that also is as sound in the science that I could possibly put together. And I run the simulation, and in the upper right-hand screen is the familiar water content time slice that Hydrus 2D generates with the black background. So I generate a water content, a series of time slices through Hydrus 2D, and then I take and simply import those images into PowerPoint, into Photoshop, because I like a cleaner presentation than what Hydrus gives me directly. And I import those into Photoshop, and then simply using ImageMaker in Photoshop, I create an animation. The animation then is transportable as a GIF file, which tidies everything up very nicely, and it's very easily ported into PowerPoint. Now I'm just going to show you some examples. Water flow in layered soil. Layered soils are very important to these people. This is just a simple principle-driven type of presentation. We've got a column of sand, 1 meter column of sand in connection with the water table. We've got sand, 30 centimeters of sand over gravel, 30 meters of sand over clay loam. You know what's going to happen, so I'm not going to go over what's involved here. I'm just showing some of the ideas I've generated. I incorporate turf rooting into all my simulations, or plant rooting into all my simulations, because it's important for me to also say to the students, and here is how the plant responds to this certain set of environmental conditions and this certain soil situation. Because they're very interested in that, and it's a useful way to communicate the soil physics in terms of what they deal with on a day-to-day basis, trying to keep the plant alive. I use the FETI's water uptake reduction models, as you see. This is part of Hydrus. The animation starts with a rainfall. 1 hour we have rainfall, and we can see the water infiltrating into the soil. And then we can see that magical process in the middle, due to the capillary barrier phenomenon, where you know the water doesn't just simply fall into the gravel, and they're just astounded. And they look at this and they instantly pick it up and they're astounded by this. How does that happen? And then it gives me lots of avenues to talk about, you know, the mechanisms behind that. But basically, the scenarios run like this. I generate a rainstorm, and then I let the situation drain, and then I have day-night transpiration cycles so that the turf grass uses up the water, so we can get some differential response near the end of the simulation period, where we get, of course, the sand column is quite dry compared with the other two. And then I just have it on a continuous loop, so in my classroom, I can talk about, you know, what's going on several times. Then, again, to document the turf response, I generate from values from hydrus. Hydrus has a R root value, which is basically a boundary condition input value for the transpiration demand on the plant. And hydrus generates a V root parameter, which is the actual evapotranspiration of the plant in response to the FETI's water uptake reduction factors. And using that formula there in the lower left, a simple formula, I can generate a stress index, a daytime turf grass water stress index, and I can say, oh, and look, this is the way, you know, if we have a continuous sand column, the turf goes under very early drought stress and, you know, dies eventually, you know, very within a couple of days. We get very high levels of turf stress index. But if we have, you know, sand over gravel or sand over clay loam, something very different happens. So I use that approach to relate to the animation. Another animation I've got here is water flow in putting greens, a little bit more realistic. 100-foot transect through the center of a putting green, and beneath that transect, I create soil profiles. One is one matches a USGA green, the other matches a California green, which are standard construction methods in the industry. I went to a golf course architect, and I told him, asked me to give me the elevations or the contours of a typical putting green, and that's the surface he gave me there. That surface is shown at a 10% vertical exaggeration, or tenfold vertical exaggeration, as in all the remaining images of this particular animation. And so this is a surface elevations of a putting green. Below that, I build soil profiles constituting either a USGA putting green or a California putting green. And not to get into a lot of details on these, but the differences are that the USGA putting green has this 100 millimeter thick gravel layer completely underneath the root zone, between the root zone and the native subsoil, and the California green does not. These red vertical lines are drain line trenches of 20 centimeters deep and 15 centimeters wide that would hold the drain line pipe spaced at 4.6 meters apart for each of them. So then I, you know, created these profiles. I inserted hydraulic parameters, the Van Gunnuchten parameters and KSAT values based upon literature numbers of typical situations for these greens. And here's the animation. We have a big rain. You can see the water infiltrate the soil profile. And again, they're amazed at being able to visually see the differences between these two construction methods. It's not surprising for you or me what happens, but they're surprised to see the differences in terms of the water content distribution between these. And I don't have to do a lot of explaining. For some reason, people look at this and instantly interpret that this is water moving through the soil. I'm hoping that you're on the same page with me. And this is a visualization of it. The word was that California greens are better drained than USGA greens, and you can see, you know, that they're really not an effective soil profile for drainage, and the USGA is more to that. I should have got a little carried away. Again, turf grass water stress index was calculated, where I can show, using the same method as before, show the differences between the systems. Drainage. Drainage is a more difficult problem. Here's a drainage scenario. 12-foot section, or a 3.66 meter section through the middle of a type of putting green. Once again, that constitutes basically a 100 millimeter thick sand layer on top of native soil. All right, that's that particular type of construction. And if you're familiar, if you think about that layering of soil on a fairly flat expanse of land, you can imagine that there will be a drainage problem. And people have a lot of concerns of draining those types of soils. And so I'm talking about some approaches on how to do that. That's part of my lecture. And I have shown in one case two scenarios, one with a 50 millimeter pipe at 406 millimeters depth in the middle of that 12-foot section, right? And the other one with the same pipe configuration, but a sandy backfill connecting the native, you know, where the pipe is located in the native soil with the sandy material above. And I believe the animation comes up next. Yeah, we have rain, of course. And we can see, you know, it's kind of silly. I mean, it rains and it gets wet and then it gets dry. But one thing about drainage that you see instantly here, it's really hard to discern because things get really, really wet and then they just don't dry out that fast when you're concerned about different drainage approaches. Whereas I can show there is some difference between the two, it's a very subtle difference. So consequently, I also use a tool out of Hydrus, which is the water flow vectors, or Darcyan vectors of water flow, to illustrate water flow to the drain line for those two contrasting situations. That's what these two animations here show. Unfortunately, these two animations, the color scale is not the same for both. And I have to, I came up with a plan on how to come up with the same colors for both of that. But again, it shows, the people I teach appreciate seeing, you know, this idea of the waters. They see how it's flowing and it's going this way and then it's turning and it's going that way and then it's turning and it's going that way they can understand the process, I believe, a little bit better. Again, I can calculate a stress index using the same approach as before, and I can show that instead of a drought stress, the aeration stress is less pronounced or the aeration stress is less pronounced when we have the sandy backfill as when we don't. And again, relating to how the plant senses that system. And then my final animation, which I probably should stop here pretty soon. I kind of lost track of my time.
You got another minute or two.
Okay. My final animation is from Shaw, using Shaw. Soil temperature, soil energy balance, using the big leaf model of a canopy over top of the soil. I found it to be a pretty not so much user-friendly model, but it does encompass the nice features of using energy balance to generate soil temperature distributions. And so I ran a simulation with Shaw that uses all of the hourly weather data from Worcester, Ohio in 2004, and with underneath a Worcester silt loam soil, and with a 13-centimeter grass canopy. And so this shows that for 3 days within that year's cycle, hourly soil and canopy temperatures, where the dashed line, of course, is the soil surface here, and the values above are temperatures within that plant canopy, and the values below are temperatures within the soil. And the single dot above there is the air temperature. And with that, you know, we can talk about diurnal fluctuations of temperature and day and night conditions. I think that's all. That's the last slide I've got. So,
questions for Ray?
Yes.
You are going to this simulation study. How much do students have a knowledge of soil physics? What I mean, unsaturated hydraulic conductivity or irrigation?
Yeah, they don't know about unsaturated hydraulic conductivity.
How
They know about saturated conductivity.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But they learn about the dynamics of the system, and they learn about we always do is we always compare one system to another system. So they learn how does this soil situation affect flow in relationship to this other soil situation. So I think that's where the power of the learning comes in, while not asking them to have a strong background in, like, for example, unsaturated flow conditions or even having a strong background in the water retention curve, the Van Gennepen water retention curve or any other water retention curve. They know something about how, you know, water is retained by soils. They know about water retention in soils, but they don't. When you get into the curve, you've got an equation and their eyes glaze right over and you've lost them. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, but you showed that, for example, layered soil, it's very, for me, difficult to teach them, you know, how the conductivity of the sand is very low for the dry space.
No, there is a, there's a textbook, by a Japanese author of like 1978 that talks about the mechanism of this water perching in layered soils, and I teach that mechanism so they understand how the mechanism works in terms of capillary attraction upward, gravity downward, this tugging and pulling. It's not exactly. There's different ways of teaching that principle, right? But I use that I teach that principle. But I do it after I show what happens to catch them and bring them in.
Okay, I think we need to go on. The next speaker is Toby Ewing, talking about teaching advanced soil physics.